chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Halftime hour, it's Mr. Milt Webber and the board. We also have Mr. Frank Fahey. We've got NASDAQ down 9. We got the Spooz down. Where do we have the Spooz down? Looking right here, right
13.
At him.
Down 13. 13.
There you go, Frank. How are you?
Good. Good.
So what's up in your world? Anything good?
Not really. I mean, it's every day's Thursday.
Well,
you know, it's the same old, same old. Now, there's, I guess, the market's up.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it may be down 13, but, I mean, an 11-year bull market is hard to fade.
11 years of the Fed average and 8.5% money supply growth. When it should be like 3.5%. Just saying.
It's amazing.
And they managed to hide the inflation in a few spots and... And what, you know what? I'm getting tired of talking about it because nobody wants to listen. It's bizarre.
And that's part of the strategy.
Well, yeah.
And for any politician.
Well, I was...
You just deny and move... I don't want to say move forward, but move in the direction that the politician chooses.
Was it duck, dodge, and hide? Was that it?
Yes.
What was that from? You know what? That was a...
No idea.
You know what? That was a Three Stooges episode. Duck, Dodge, and Hide. Oh, I forget what it was.
I knew it was something highbrow.
Well, you know, that was Stooges were highbrow.
Today is a day that people used to talk about a lot in our youth.
Yes.
It's rarely discussed.
Maddie Weber, what is it?
The Pearl Harbor Day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just watching, I can't say as I'm a... huge fan of Google, but I'm pretty much of a fan of this YouTube. And they've had, you know, who the hell would want to listen to this other than me? The all the battleships that got blasted at Pearl Harbor, you know, just about all of them made it back into service. They were all redone,
with the exception of the Arizona,
Arizona and the Utah, because Utah was a. I don't think they did the. There was one other one they maybe didn't do either, but they sold it for scrap. But the Nevada, West Virginia, and the California all got back within like a year and a half, and were all used again. And it takes, you know, it took 3 years to make a new one. So, but the some of the stuff we talk about disgusting. Those guys that the amount of when they dug in and raised the things. Most of them had, like, whatever you want to call it. They all had all the food and everything put on them in case they needed to go out to sea. So all that stuff was no good. All the oil had to be drained on them. It was just disgusting, the stuff they had to clean out of those things. I mean, just not good. But, I mean, they put these huge coffer dams, essentially, on the big holes in the bow, refloated the damn things. They looked like something that would never, ever run again. Then all of a sudden they drag it over to dry dock and, you know, somehow weld the thing back together and somehow get it back to San Francisco or Portland or someplace. And 6 months later, he got a brand new battleship. I mean, we are clever fellows when we put our mind to it. That's why when you see some of the stuff we can't seem to be able to do, I just look at it and shake my head when I know what it is we're capable of doing. And,
well, yeah. Just about anything.
Yeah. And yet when we
decide, bet we could even wear masks.
or not, or do it intelligently and figure out who has to and who doesn't and who it actually protects and do it right. I mean, we can do a lot of things. We're not about doing anything.
Yeah, right. So if you've had it, you get to wear a gold star. I think we're against things like that by labeling ourselves in public.
I'm not so sure we're against anything if anybody comes up with the idea. we put chips
it
in
our... It appears more that we're against everything.
Yeah.
Each group has something they're against.
Well, I was I was discussing a lot of stuff with my pals this weekend, and a lot of the stuff is really, and you were one of them, by the way, and I'm not accuse you of this, but a lot of the discussion is really a total lack of basic economic knowledge, and I'm not, you know, pulling rank on anybody by saying, geez, this guy went to school for all these years, but I mean, people don't even realize a lot of times what economics is, which is essentially the apportionment of scarcity, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, if there were five cars for everybody, you wouldn't need to have prices on cars, right? Right? Everybody just get one. But that's not the way the world is.
You could go out and buy a bag of cars for $5.
Yeah, you could, or, yeah, assuming you had the five, you know, whatever, $5. But yeah, it's, but that's not how things are. And when we were discussing last night, back and forth with Carl and everybody, you know, Joe Biden's idea of getting rid of student loan debt. And I think that came out of the Bernie camp, if I'm not mistaken. And it's just, you know, what are we doing here? Where's that money going to come from?
We're charging our kids 6.5% or 7% when we're giving Morgan Stanley and other banks money at 1.5% so that they can loan it to somebody else that loans it to students.
Right.
And you talk to kids or people from Matt's generation that had to borrow to go to college, and you can see that it's just eminently unfair.
Well, sure it is. Well, credit cards are no different.
It cuts down access to quality education and opens the door to fraud.
It opens the door to fraud in education.
In education, our president was guilty of it.
Well, but I mean, that's why Notre Dame charges $70,000 a year, because they can't.
Right, exactly. You know, tuition, when I could pay for room and board for a year on a summer job.
Oh, me too.
Think about it.
Oh,
the room and board right now is what, $28,000?
No, it's not that much.
What kids, $20,000? Okay.
It's like 16 for the biggest ones.
For the biggest ones?
Yeah, for the worst ones.
Oh. For the worst ones, what kid can make over $1,000 a week?
Well, when they bring you back in the midsummer for like orientation or anything else, they don't even give lip service to summer jobs anymore. Who's kidding who? I mean, you couldn't even have one, I don't think. Well, maybe you could, but it'd be hard to.
No, the best jobs you don't get paid for, and you get hired based on connections. So that's another filter that keeps people from moving up.
Well, I think
the egalitarian principles of our country, supposed egalitarian.
Well, I mean, it depends on who you talk to. I mean, there's some people think everything's fine because they're doing real well, right?
Because they're benefiting from a rigged game.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's you know what they say.
Hey, you're starting to talk like somebody in the middle or the left again. You better just temper it a bit.
Well, I mean, I think that one of the reasons, and this is going to cause me to be considered to be Mr. Right now, where I used to be Mr. Left. In fact, I'm sort of in the middle. I'm trying to do the Milton Friedman thing without the Nobel Prize, where people think I'm shifting, and I don't ever shift. I mean, I think the same thing about stuff. That's what makes girlfriends real happy with me. I never change. You know, what can I tell you? It's
I think we can end that part of the conversation.
Yeah, makes everybody real happy with you. One of those things. But you're like, what are we doing? And in the sense of, you know, we don't seem to have any plans on anything. And yet, if you look at, I mean, the two ladies that I had breakfast with yesterday, of course, they're very, very, very on the right, shall we say. Would be my significant other and her girlfriend. But very bright, and you know, you don't learn from people who agree with you, you learn from people who don't. But the amazing thing is you look at some of the things they want to have happen, and some of the things that people on the left want to have happen, and either side seems to want to agree that if you look at the numbers over the last 20, 25 years, and I really credit Carl with this, you can't tell when one person walks in or another one walks out. I mean, they were all over about, look at all the great stuff that's happened during the Trump administration. And I said, wait a minute. I said, I don't disagree that Trump has had some out-of-the-box ideas that if he would have had the personality to be able to follow them through, that some of the stuff he said, some, was a breath of fresh air because these other people need to be called out on stuff. I mean, I don't have any problem saying that because I really believe it. And but then he tripped all over himself and didn't really accomplish anything, which, you know, is a problem because now we're never going to get anybody from the outside again. We're going to be a bunch of Joe Bidens for the rest of our lifetime, which is not... But the fact is that, you know, they said something like, look what he's doing with prescription drugs. I said, no. He hasn't done a damn thing. Like I said, he talked about prescription drugs.
Excuse me.
He talked about prescription drugs. So did Clinton. So did Bush 1. So did Bush 2. You look at the chart, you can't tell when any of these guys make these outpeeps, whenever they take a dump, you can't tell anything. They haven't done anything. All the way through the line. But he's got this exact... I'm just saying, if you look at the numbers, there's nothing there. In the same way with, you know, antitrust, the same thing. You can pick about five subjects that are near and dear to everybody.
You can do insurance, too.
You can do employment. I mean, until the COVID, Trump was you know, bleating around like a bazoo about how the unemployment... You look at the numbers of Obama's last 4 years versus Trump's first 3 years before COVID. They're exactly the same every month. I'm not saying either one or both didn't do a good job, bad job. I'm just saying they're the same numbers. It was like, what, 170?
Well, if you're willing to, you know, make $8.50 an hour working at McDonald's, they did a great job.
Well, that's even more into the subtlety. I'm just saying the number was 170.
Oh, I understand your rant about economics.
But, I mean, the numbers is strictly, you know, it was 175 a month on average for, what, 8 years after the fiasco in 2008. More like 10 years. That doesn't mean Trump did bad. Doesn't mean Obama did bad. I'm just saying they're the same. and I can prove it. I can't tell you who did what where. I'm just saying to say one did a great job and one did another, it's just not there. I mean, that's my only point.
Well, but who summed it up? Meet the new boss.
Yeah.
Same as the old boss.
Well, that's right.
White dude.
Speaking of which, guess what happened to me yesterday? One of the luckiest things in terms of traffic, not for anybody else, just for me. What do you suppose happened, Frank, yesterday? I'm driving back from Moreland, minding my own business.
And it was lucky.
For me.
Somebody got shot on the expressway after you had gone through that area.
Well, something along those lines. Yeah, not exactly that, but something along those lines.
You got through, the expressway was closed down right after you drove through that section.
I got off the, you know, the road to Stevenson going on to the Ryan now is a real pain in the behind.
Oh, yes.
Well, it turns out there was an accident. It could have been 40 yards before that merge up on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole thing was shut down right before we got on. Like, hey, why is this thing so fast? All of a sudden I got to Kennedy, they see all these lights that I pull right out of. I'm like the only car going north on the Kennedy going, hey, this is cool. But it wasn't cool for the guy in the accident, obviously. You know,
No.
But, so then you...
Here's an interesting stat about electoral attitude. A year before Pearl Harbor, polls showed that 90% of all Americans were against any involvement at all in Europe.
Well, so are the Brits, right?
Well, they sort of are right now.
I mean, they were after World War One. They wanted no part of it.
Right.
So, I mean, things change. And
quickly.
And, you know, some of it is, you know, it's, and then that's what Roosevelt was very concerned that he could not get ahead of public opinion, right?
So he created Lend-Lease.
And some other stuff in terms of who's going to do what where.
Perhaps ignoring the intelligence about it, Pearl Harbor. What do you think about that one?
You know, I don't know about that because they had a lot of... again, it was... How can I say this? It goes to somewhat of our racial roots. Did you ever read a book called Pearl Harbor Ghosts?
No, I did not.
It's pretty interesting in the sense that, you know, what was going on with Pearl Harbor. And every time there was an alert, a lot of times the people were just very concerned about the Japanese population in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's why the planes were parked in the middle of the field, because they were worried more about sabotage than they were any sort of attack from somewhere else, because they did have alerts. Right. So
yes, back in the days of the Yellow Menace.
And but the weird part of it is, the guy who was, and I just read his name the other day, the guy who was their number one spy, who actually came from, he was a spy, I don't know where he was, China or some other place, and then he came there. And all of a sudden, but have you ever watched, Matt, it's a movie from out of the past, Burt Lancaster, and it was Frank Sinatra. Did he win an Oscar for that? Or he didn't, he got nominated. Have you ever heard of Eternity?
Mm-hmm.
That was the movie in The Godfather where Frank got the role, right? Where they kill the guy's horse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that part of The Godfather, Manny?
I've never seen The Godfather.
Oh my God! Of course, I remember that part. Yeah,
that says a lot. It says a lot about Frank.
How have you never seen The Godfather?
As I said, now I know. Now I know.
Because I knew the real ones. I don't need to see The Godfather. I'm pretty ADD, and sitting in a 2.5-hour movie stretches.
Well, you could have read the book.
I did read the book.
Well, then you didn't have to see the movie. Just saying.
But I never watched the movie.
Anyway, the part where they went to get what was the guy's name, the singer? He went to get the singer the part, Tom Hagen, and the guy said, the part's perfect for him, but he's such a bleep, I won't give it to him, and blah, 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 and the Godfather offered to give him some dough and whatever it took, and he just said no.
What did he call Johnny Fontaine, right?
Yeah, and he called that was essentially Frank Sinatra, and so when Tom Hagen, what he said, you Guineas, and he goes, I'm Irish Catholic or something. He said to him, remember that part?
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was the role in From Here to Eternity for Frank Sinatra, allegedly. Again, allegedly. So. Anyway, if you watch any of those movies about Pearl Harbor, I've never been there, when you drive up and out of that area, you climb up this, there's a road that winds around, and there's this overlook that you can see, like, right down onto Pearl Harbor. And, evidently, the guy who was the spy, with all these rumors of spies, everybody's all worried about it, every day, the guy went up to that spot and took pictures of the ships that were in the harbor coming and going, and nobody ever saw them or touched them. So the guy went to like the obvious. It's like if you're going to do something in Chicago and you're going to plan for a terrorist attack, you got some guy going to the top of the Willis Tower every day taking all kinds of pictures, and nobody messed with him. Even though you got massive terrorist alerts, hey, could I go up and get some pictures of the city? Sure, sir. Go right ahead. I mean, anyway.
Hey, right after 9/11, in the month after 9/11, my family was up in Michigan, and we used to drive a vehicle on top of earthen dams, and nobody ever questioned us, and we could have taken out, destroyed towns if that thing was filled with
explosives. Why would you do something like that, just out of curiosity?
Nobody checked yet.
Why would you do something like that, just out of curiosity?
To get to the other side.
Ah, there you go.
So, usually pulling a kayak trailer to go kayaking.
So there's a similarity between the Fahey family and the chicken crossing the road, is what you're telling me.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen a road that I didn't want to see the end of.
Oh, God. Anyway, so of course, Frank and I were arguing yesterday. A lot of stuff we want to talk about this morning is the student loan thing, because our man Joe Biden, seemingly somebody stole his calculator just like they stole Bernie's. Who wants to get rid of student loan debt. So, of course, I dig in last night trying to figure out, back and forth with our guys, Frank and Carl and Kevin and John Flanagan and everybody, is what exactly, I mean, who holds student loan debt? And, of course, I get this summary, we should maybe send that out, Matty, an article about it. It is one of the most complicated things I've ever seen, Frank. Everybody's involved in this. Everybody's got their finger in the pie. Who exactly are the, well, plus then Frank and I talk on the phone regarding whether there should be, single payer stuff for healthcare, and again, it comes down to how much money are we spending, who's paying for it, and who's going to pay differently, and who's going to get involved if you change over the thing works, and the people who make these, you can just tell that their opinion of whoever it is they're talking to is very low. mentally. I mean, it's, which is unfortunate. I mean,
and all of them have employer-paid health care too.
But I mean, we've dumbed down. I'm sorry, Frank, I bounced back to the tuition part. We obviously, how many people, like somebody who's got student loan debt, if how many? I mean, you would think, first of all, if you got student loan debt, that you've been, quote, a student, right? And if you're a student, you might have learned something. Like as my grandmother used to say, you didn't go to school just to eat your lunch. You know, you must have learned something along the way. So if somebody says, we're going to get rid of all student loan debt, the first questions that should pop into your mind, not just, hey, I've got student loan debt. This will be cool. I can afford more beer. No. I mean, come on. You went to school to learn something. The idea is, all right, how many people are we talking about? How much money are we talking about? Who holds the debt? Are we going to have to bail those people out? Does that mean even though my student loan number goes down, my debt with the government goes up? I mean, who's going to get hurt and who's not? I mean, there should be.
Well, what's the impact on universities?
Well, right. So I dug into this thing, and there's a bazillion loans. When they say private loans, Frank, who are they talking about? Do you have any idea? I'm going to be going through this now we'll be talking about this for a while.
I've tried to figure out. I can't figure out whom. Somebody made the loan and services the loan, but where did they get the money from? They probably got it from somebody who borrowed it at 1.5% from the Fed.
Well, yeah, there was a big list in the thing I sent you guys regarding who services them. So it's like mortgages. You know, I mean, it's kind of a bizarre world, but I guess my point is, I mean, but these are the questions that should pop up. I mean, Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders or Trump or anybody shouldn't be able to get in front of 100,000 people or on Twitter and say, by the way, I'm canceling student loan debt. Yay! Let's have a shot of tequila and we'll all go back to the White House. I mean, we should be saying, wait a minute. How the hell do you just get rid of $1.6 trillion like that without anybody having a problem? Fact is, you're not going to be able to. And the more you lob this stuff out there, it comes right back to the big lie theory of Hitler, for God's sake. Just keep throwing crap out
of
people.
And when you look at it, it's another example of socialism. And I'm not talking about loaning it to the students. I'm talking about the corporate socialism, where there's a lot of people making a lot of money. And it's so convoluted that you can't get rid of it.
Well, that's right. And, long before you were on the show, Maddie and I talked, Frank, sorry, Maddie's been here since day one. When I used to do this stuff, matter of fact, I'll dig it up, but we used to do this stuff from, the debtclock.org, and they didn't break student loans out from, regular household debt. And then they did. And all of a sudden we kept watching the student loan debt versus, the other debt. And when the day, Manny, I cannot remember, I'm going brain dead. I'm going to say, do you remember what year it was that student loan debt, passed? Credit card debt was around, actually credit card debt really has not gone up that much. It's like $955 billion, so call it a trillion. I'm going to say student loan debt went through there 5 years ago. There's a look back on this thing. Let me see if I can look back to a regular to it before they hit it. But now it's like $1.7 trillion. So, I mean, it's not even really close. I mean, it's just blown through everything else. And, let me see if I can find a person. Consumer debt, credit card debt. See, they didn't even bring, student loan debt was not even broken out in 2016. It was all in just consumer debt. Then they broke it out. Okay, so it must have been in 2017, so say 3 years ago. And, so I mean, but all of a sudden now it's picked up like it's almost, what's 40% higher, 45% higher than credit card debt. I mean, these are big numbers, and these people have it. You know what's weird? Do you see how many people that have it are over 61? Why do people that old have the student loan debt? I mean, are guys like you going to school or what? Frank, are you there? We lose Frank?
I think we might have lost him.
Well, he ducked out silently. He didn't like but he was going to say that he's still going to school or something.
That's all right. We need to throw it to break anyway.
All right. Let me find out where the S&P futures are. Because I'm on my student debt. I'm on my debt page. Frank's going to say you just dumped him. Just saying, you know, it is. S&P futures down 13. Dow futures down 109. NASDAQ futures down 8. Be back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Jocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Matt Wormer on the board. Mr. John Flanagan. So, Matt, is there any connection between Frank ducking off and us asking him if he still had student loan debt at age 90? Just saying.
Good question.
S&P futures down 13, Dow futures down 108, NASDAQ futures down 5. This is not much after Friday's record-setting session. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 48.4%. FTSE up 19.3. FTSE's been the horse over there the last week. I don't know if it's because they're getting the vaccines first or what. I have no idea. I'm just saying that's a piece of news out there. I also could say because Matty Weber won all his football games this weekend, too, but there wouldn't be much correlation there either. Gekaran down 42. That's 0.8% over in Asia.
And it wouldn't be true.
It wouldn't be true. Did you take BYU?
I actually didn't bet any games this weekend, full disclosure, so no. But I did watch a lot of that game, and, man, both teams are very good. Like, the smaller schools don't get the credit, but going undefeated is really hard no matter how big a school you are. And a lot of people took Coastal Carolina lightly because they haven't played anybody, and they were really good.
Well, let's talk about this as I'm done with this stuff we're doing here. Nikkei down 203.7%, Shanghai down 27.8%. Hang Seng down a bunch, though, down 329, it's 1.2%. So Asia, that's not so hot here. Evidently, Singapore's major bank stocks are in the crapple here this morning. I'm not exactly sure why. I'll try and find that out for tomorrow. Bonds, 0.94%. which again, this is up to 0.87 they were stuck on forever. Bund minus 0.57, they don't move at all. Neither does Japan, positive 0.02. We've got oil down 53 cents, 45.73. Brent down 51 cents, 48.74. Natural gas down 18 cents at 2.39. That's a big drop. And RBOB, 125, that's down a penny. There's somebody come out and say we're going to have like a mild winter or something in it. Natural gas was pushing $3, I think, and it's just gotten hammered. Gold down 650, 1833. Silver down 43 cents, 23.81. Copper down 3 cents, 3.48. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We are very quiet, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no accidents or issues to report on any of our expressways at this hour. So enjoy a nice, quiet commute if you're coming in. Only crash in the area is up in the northern suburbs. Looks like Belvedere Road on the westbound side at US 45. There is a crash. But again, everything else is nice and quiet if you are heading into downtown this morning. Weather today, it's going to be a chilly day. We'll have some sunshine later on, unlike yesterday, but a high of just 39. Right now it's overcast and 36 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 80 today. Right now it's clear and 42. In sports, it looked like the Bears were on their way to snapping their five-game losing streak with a 10-point lead late in the fourth quarter, only to give up a score and then a strip sack turnover deep in their own territory, which the Lions pounded into the end zone behind Adrian Peterson. And all of a sudden, the Bears were down 34-30, couldn't get anything going on the final drive, and that was all she wrote. Bears lose to the Lions 34-30. They've now dropped six in a row and are 5-7 after a 5-1 start. Mitchell Trubisky was solid, 26 of 34, 267 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions. That's a 108 QB rating. And the running game was okay in the first half, but was really bottled up in the second half. Montgomery was finished with 17 and 72. He also had two touchdowns, including his first touchdown, which is really nice. Cordell Patterson rushed the ball pretty well, too. 10 carries, 59 yards, and a touchdown. That's a 5.9 yard average. But not enough for the Bears, who dropped the 5-7. Arizona Cardinals are tail spinning as well. They lost a 10-point game at home to the Rams. 38-28 was the final in that one. So the Arizona Cardinals, after it looked like they were a lock to make the playoffs and Kyler Murray was in the MVP discussion, all of a sudden they've lost three in a row, Chief, and are down to 500 at 6-6, third place in the NFC West. Sunday Night Football last night, it was the Chiefs hanging on to beat the Denver Broncos at home 22-16. And in college hoops, the Irish were in action last night, and they fought off a tough Detroit Mercy team who almost beat Michigan State on Friday. Notre Dame won 78-70. Chief.
John, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Tom. How about you?
I'm hanging in there, you know, upside down like a bat, they say. You know, but, everything's kind of... Everything in our world is a little crazed. I mean, the market's a little crazed. I mean, stuff all over the place. The Dow are going all over the place, taking gold and oil and everything else with it. Real quick, Matty, and that Coastal, what were those guys? Our Coastal Atlantic?
Coastal Carolina.
Coastal
Atlantic,
whatever, somewhere over there. Carolina's on the Atlantic. Right?
It is, yeah.
So they could just easily be Coastal Atlantic.
They could, but they're not.
They're not, okay. Well, Kevin talked a while ago about sometimes these schools, you know, even putting Northern Illinois in that group, are, I won't say lucky enough, but they're fortunate because a lot of guys that are of higher class, shall we say, 4-star and 5-star, not necessarily 5, head off to some place, get sort of disinterested in it, and fall back to some other place, like a Northern or like maybe something like this, and a few of their buddies that were maybe in the same boat kind of hear about it, and all of a sudden you'll see a school you wouldn't expect to have, you know, 4 or 5 guys that are 3, 4, or I won't say 5-star, but that are actually pretty darn good. Is that kind of what happened to these guys, you think, or no?
I don't know much about their history. I do know that their coach is in his third year and has really built a strong program in that time. And usually in college, at least what I've seen, the good coaches that know what they're doing, whether they're young or they're veteran coaches, it usually takes about 2 years of rebuilding, getting your guys in there, and then usually by year three, you really start to see a difference. And then year four, by the time that initial class is academic seniors, then that's when you really go on your big run. So he's going on his big run ahead of schedule, as far as I would say. And, they're part of the Sun Belt Conference. And
I don't ever remember them being competitive in any sport, let alone football. But they have two top 25 wins now and are undefeated. And I don't think they're any threat of making the playoff, but they're a really good team that I don't think anyone wants to play if there are bowl games.
All right, so this is one of those things where the coach at the end of this year or next year gets big bucks at Michigan and then you never see or hear from this team ever again.
I think that's a very good possibility, yeah. Unless he has like a top assistant or something that takes over and keeps it going, which sometimes you see that for at least a few years. But yeah, I think this guy is going to get, you know, a big job, you know, SEC, like South Carolina or something would be a job that I think would make a lot of sense for him. And then get goes in an SEC conference and then we'll see if he's good enough to do it at with the big boys.
That's what happened. Well, Denera come from Miami of Ohio and they had a good team. Then he left. They weren't so good. I mean, that happens all over.
Absolutely.
The
place. Yep.
The guy, Butler has managed to hang in there with this guy going to the Celts though. I mean, they're not as good, but they're.
Well, Butler, they only seem to hire assistants of the former head coach. So they have this long lineage with like Thad Matta and Todd Licklider and Brad Stevens and a couple of other guys. The Ohio State basketball coach, whose name is I'm drawing a blank on right now, but is also a really good coach. And they just a guy has four or five good years there, and then goes on to greener pastures. And they only seem to hire the assistant coach from within and keep it going. So they have some continuity there. And they've become sort of the Pittsburgh Steelers of college basketball, where they just kind of they have their program, it's run their way, they recruit their way, and they keep it in the family.
Dodgers are like that forever too.
Yeah, and that's worked for them. And Butler's been very competitive, going from a smaller conference team to now being very competitive in the Big East for several years.
So I was listening to the After Bears. Usually I leave earlier from Duburbs,
the post game show.
The post game show. And trying to get back while the game's still on. But yesterday, I was finished watching it at Audrey's. Saturday, I went and got a battery for my truck, John. So now we won't have to push, you know. So that's a good thing. I went to my dudes down in Orland. Real guys got guys. So I went to my guys and they took care of me. At Checkpoint Auto, they always do a great job. Anyway, going back and we talk on the show tongue in cheek. I mean, I don't think people. Think sometime, Maddie, if they know whether we're kidding or whether we're being serious. Especially when we talk about fans and people in general. And one of the things I've always said is that I didn't think this up, but of course I read this a long time ago. Actually, I was in Jackson, Wyoming skiing. And somehow or another there must have been if you're a U.S. citizen and you go to live in Singapore, you're an expat. Isn't that what they call you, John?
Yeah.
Well, what if you from Chicago and you moved to Jackson, Wyoming? You were an ex-Chicagoan, or what are you? So some guy writes this article, and he had the whole back page of the Jackson Inkblot, or whatever the name of the newspaper was, and he talked about Chicago teams. So this had to be in the late 70s, maybe. And he talked about how all they did was hire and fire managers and coaches and hockey coaches and the Bulls. Everybody's hiring and firing everybody. And he was saying how it's like the opiate of the people, where if you fired a coach when people are disgusted with the team, it gives you essentially 2 free years of the fans being out not being up your behind, that they now give the new guy a chance and got to give him a couple years and blah blah blah. So sure enough, the people start calling in yesterday into the post show. We got to make a change. We got to get rid of these guys and see what they can do and change the whole status around, the whole direction. I'm thinking, you're going to give these buffoons another 2 or 3 years, just like you did last time. And it's funny, man, if you watch the Bears, as long as I've watched them, because my uncles were crazed about the Bears. And I can remember watching these idiots in, 59, 60, when I was a little kid, we'd go up to the saloon where they were getting the game from South Bend or someplace and watch, and they'd drag me with and sit me in a bar stool. And, watching it's the same stuff. They don't pay for anybody. The family owns the place. They make nothing but money. I'm going to say that family, in addition to paying all their people, everybody in the family's on payroll, I bet they make what, $85-90 million a year, 100? I mean, that's real number for a family. You think they'd like to win, I'm sure, but do you think they really care?
No, I don't think they care at all.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Virginia would rather.
It's a lot more expensive for them to have
a hotshot team than a mediocre or a poor one, because they make money without having to spend a lot of money if they have a mediocre team, and it, you know, it just keeps coming in. So that's kind of the model of sports team ownership that I can see, at least the way it worked until maybe it still works in some corners, like with the Bears and some other teams. But overall, that's the key. You know, I think that's been the Reinsdorf model for quite a while, really. It doesn't matter if you have a winning team or not.
Well, they got the world's best lease, the Sox.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And
we pay for it.
Yeah, we pay for it. But anyway, Jan, we had that stuff flying back and forth on student loans last night, and Frank and I, of course, were going back and forth yesterday about single-payer healthcare systems, and I actually was talking about that with my significant other and one of her friends at breakfast, and of course I ended up having to pay. Actually, no, Audrey bought it, come to think of it. Well, at least I got that satisfaction. Because, of course, the place out in the southwest burbs are all open, right, even though they're not supposed to be. So explain to me this. If you're going to be open, this is a Matty Weber question. If you're going to be open in defiance of all Jay's proclamations, why do you care about not giving somebody the salt shaker and giving somebody the little salt packets?
Good question.
It's like we're going to open up the speakeasy and sell illegal booze, but oh, by the way, we got to make sure we have the right grade of toilet paper in a can. I mean, what's the difference at that?
Or the right pails to put your beer in.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So we were talking about the pontifications from Joe Biden, and of course, Audrey made me watch some of the Trump rally, which was interesting. And you know what? They're arguing with me about the election. And I have a middle of the road question. I know you guys are in different ends of the political spectrum. I have just a simple question. We tried countrywide, some because of COVID, some because of God knows what else. In some states, I think the people on the right made it difficult for people to vote, whatever. But we had this massive national experiment in this mail-in voting, right? And for me, I'm a simple soul. It's a simple soul from the South Side. I got on the block. I walk in. I give them my name. They pull out my page. There's my signature. They look at me. I sign the thing. They check the signatures. And actually, they were bitching at me this year because somewhere along the line, I got lazy. Instead of writing Thomas, I write Tom. Well, when I first went there 20 years ago, I must have wrote Thomas. So they demanded to see a driver's license to see if I, in fact, had changed it from Thomas to Tom, which I didn't change it. I just stop writing time is without writing time. And they said, okay, big smile, and off I went. Now, to me, have a total alternative system to where maybe none of that's part of the program, I immediately, my the question here on the back of my neck goes up. How are we going to police this? How are we going to check it? How are we going to do something? I'm not accusing one side or the other. I'm not accusing anything. I'm just saying that whether it's Trump or whether it's anybody, I think on a federal level, you need to put a couple of people together that are, if we can find anybody in this country anymore, if we can find anybody who's not biased, and just say, how did this work? I mean, did all the swelling in the votes in some areas, the stuff that came in late, was it balanced, not balanced? Did the mail-in ballots that came in a day late, did they match up with the stuff that came in a month earlier? Was a massive difference? I just want to know, Jim. I mean, I'm not saying... I'm not going to go out on a limb and say Trump won. I don't believe he did. I mean, I think Biden won, and probably fairly comfortably. But I still want to know, how did this work? It's the first time. Why do I have to be on one side or the other to make that statement? Why can't I just ask a simple question? How did this work out? I can't.
I think that's part of strategy in pushing this stuff through so quickly and creating so much chaos in the process. It wasn't really ever designed, you know, when this was first being talked about, you know, 8 or 9 months ago, it wasn't about making this work smoothly. It was about throwing everything under the bus as quickly as possible and hoping that it could be covered up. If it had any crooked corners left, nobody would care very much about it, and it would be easy to read the signals and the voting results and other stuff that was less chaotic, maybe. But I just find so much evidence this time where, you know, it really was supposed to be as chaotic and crazy as it turned out to be. And if you know, things are playing played out the way they have since then. It isn't because anything went wrong just recently. This was planned from a long time ago to really happen this way. Once you say you could have mail-in ballots and you just blanket your population with ballots, you can't really expect there to be any kind of restraint on fraud because it's too easy, it's too tempting. And you know, that's one of the things that has made voting relatively secure, or at least a desire to have it secure, is that you couldn't really expect people to find opportunities for fraud in the system. As you said with your signature check, and I've had that happen too, you know, with various configurations of my name that I've used without my middle name, with my middle name, and my vote card has always stayed the same since, you know.
How many separate identities do you have now?
Oh, I mean, at least, you know, three or four.
Oh, well, yeah, you got to have that.
Because I have a father with the same first name, and you know, his name was bandied around for years. And my, you know, uncle's second, third cousins I've never met with that same name, too, same spelling, everything. So,
so do you have all of them with citizens of different countries and different colored passports and everything?
Well, at least a different state, you know.
Yeah, whatever it takes, whatever it takes.
Titles,
yeah.
But, it's easy. It's always been extremely easy to create the possibility of fraud, especially when you've got, you know, for years what used to be a very antiquated system. You have to go to the polling place. You have to show up in person, or you have an absentee ballot process, which was always very little utilized. There was very little reason, unless you were in the military,
yeah,
actually, to ever have recourse to an absentee ballot. This time, it was all about encouraging people not to come in. In fact, I was being hounded by the Secretary of State in Illinois.
Yeah.
Why haven't you, returned your mail-in ballot yet?
Well, there's a clean operation.
One. I never wanted one, so
yeah,
I got at least two mailings from them.
There's a clean operation, But then again, he has a tumbling team, so they must be clean.
Right.
No.
But what I'm saying is that the whole thing was designed to create a paper tornado,
yeah,
and expect somehow that we could actually have a result that people would be comfortable with, and it was never going to be. It couldn't have been, and I'm sure that was part of the process.
Well, but you have on both sides, people are crazed about it, and yet, if you ask the world's simplest questions, like nobody can answer them. And Frank is all for it. Let people vote, and I said, okay. Which signature do they use? Well, what do you mean? Is it the signature at the polling place? Is it the signature on your driver's license? Is it the signature on your passport if you have one? I mean, if they compare it, what do they compare it to? Because clearly if they compared it, if I were to put the signature that I now use like on my driver's license against the polling place, they might have tossed my mail ballot out because I wouldn't have a chance to show somebody an ID. Now, is that discipline not there? Is it there? You know, and then you listen to the other side, the right wing side. Oh, all these ballots came flying in from someplace. Well, okay, did they close the person's precinct, which they did in a lot of places? In some of the red states, they made dropping off ballots very, very difficult. I mean, only one spot in a county in Texas or something. Well, hell, a county in Texas could be bigger than Illinois, for God's sake. I mean, what exactly is did everybody arguing on both sides can't answer the simplest of questions. Was there signatures on these things? The only thing I got was the I don't know if it made sense. I believe it was Frank that told me that the signature was on the envelope, not the ballot, in a lot of places. And so that, because they didn't want to match the signature with the actual ballot, because they didn't want people going back through and finding out how individual people voted. So if you throw away the envelope, you essentially throw away the proof of the ballot.
Right. That's what happened in Georgia. That's why an audit of those mail-in ballots is practically impossible,
yeah,
or meaningless. What are you auditing? You know.
But I think at some point here, I mean, I'm willing to go with, Trump won Pennsylvania last time by 10,000 votes, and he lost his time by 20. I'm going to go out on a limb and say 20's probably enough that even if there was some fraud somewhere, I use the term probably, I don't know. It's probably enough where I feel somewhat comfortable with it. But I still think we need to find out, John. And I think both sides, first of all, the idea of all the rules for a national election being the province of the states, to me, that has a big suck to it. Why, how can that be? I mean, so if a state is one way or the other, they get to rig the national piece? Come on. I mean, do we really want to do this right or don't? I think the answer is no, we don't.
Well, there's much less of a premium put on doing it right now, I think, than there ever was, because with electronic voting and, you know, electronic tabulation, I mean, and electronic tracking of the whole process, you know, who got sent out a ballot, who has returned a ballot, all of this is done electronically, and you can see how easy it's been to manufacture results and to lose the paper evidence for it in the process to make it impossible ever to challenge a lot of these tabulations. And unless you've got far stricter limits on the number of pieces of paper you got flying around in the state and how to track it, and you know, you do not have voting machines hooked up to the internet. You don't have hackable equipment. You have far more stringent requirements on the sort of equipment you are allowed to use in an election of any importance, even a small. There's no election that's unimportant at a certain level, but we've taken such a cavalier attitude to it that we don't really expect it to work very fairly.
Well, no, I mean,
or legally accurate or anything else.
Well,
it's all about, you know, perception and pushing the perception that this was a good enough election for our purposes this year, which is a hell of a way to run anything.
Well, look at what they do in, you get so jaundiced, I'll use that term, by living in Chicago. I mean, you're used to having your election for, like, your county people and so forth, and an off year in the middle of March, when it's sleeting outside, and oh, by the way, I mean, you get a 10% return or 15% voter returns, and you give, like, the county people a day off to go vote. So you're starting with 200,000 votes right out of the gate, where 200,000 is probably going to carry the whole... I mean, the things we've done here forever is just... I mean, it's almost nauseating. You know, the whole idea, hey, if you want to have an election, you have two-day voting, Saturday and Sunday on a weekend, and you make it so everybody gets to their polling place. It's simple as that. That's what they do in Europe. Europe doesn't do a lot of things right, but at least they figured that out. I mean, here we don't want anybody to vote who's not going to vote our way. We should. I'm going to say I won't shoot him. I'll hit him with a water balloon. Any guy who says, or lady, it's not important who you vote for. You just got to go vote. If the guy's running or she's running, that's the biggest piece of BS I've ever heard. If they're not going to vote for them, they don't want you anywhere near the place, right?
Illinois is an interesting example because overall, I think our election processes work fairly well, and having been an election judge a couple times, overall I'm pretty comfortable and confident with what goes on. Where it's totally corrupt and crooked is in the stuff that happens long before anybody goes to the polling place, and that's in the way candidates are slated for party support, when they get, you know, petitions to get people on the ballot. And this is how Obama got his start. He threw off the ballot his mentor, Alice Palmer, in the state Senate race, where, you know, he challenged enough of her petitions where they had totally fraudulent signatures. The same person, the same handwriting, would fill out page after page of, you know, voters that were petitioning for his opponent. And he challenged, you know, enough of these to get her off of the ballot completely. But the organization has always pushed fraudulent petitions. These are signed statements, too. You know, and they're notarized and everything else, and they have, you know, political hacks that just sit down and copy out voter roll information and fake signatures and do, you know, 100 of these per day, and they get paid by the machine to do this stuff. So the process leading up to the ballot box is completely corrupt.
Well, they make it very difficult for anybody to run, which is not
right. Well, right, and you control. You know, look at how many races were unopposed in this last election in Illinois. I mean, it's an election out of 1950 Soviet Union.
Who's the guy who wanted to run? Was
ridiculous.
It? Who's the rapper who ran? Was it Kanye West?
Yeah.
Well, I'm no fan for him as president. I mean, I guess he's a good rapper. I don't know. Whatever. I never listen to rappers. But how is it the guy spent how many months and he ended up on what? Three states? Four states? I mean, why is every state so interested in blocking the guy? It's an election. That's not your job.
Well, they fear the power of the vote. because they know that they're political organizations, and this doesn't, it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on, they're all supporting the insiders always. And how to get to be an insider is such a disgusting process that it's better left to those people anyway, because it involves completely selling your soul and your ethics to the, you know, the chairman of the board before you even get a crack at.
Well, that's what whenever I hear people say, you know, get out and vote, it's your, first of all, I always get on the black and vote, you know, and as much as it bothers the hell out of me. The only good thing about voting that's ever happened is I found Eric as a friend after voting. Now you might say, how the hell did you do that? So I went and voted, went home, hustled home, 5 o'clock. I went down there and I voted no for all the judges because Bridget told me, make sure you vote no for a few of them. And now that she's retired, I can say that. So I forgot who the names were. She said to vote no, so I voted no for everybody. So I was so disgusted. Everybody was running unopposed. I hustled over to Tripoli. I'm sitting at the bar having a glass of wine, and this big black guy comes in and sits next to me. The place is empty, and he sits right next to me. So we start, I start BSing like I do with everybody. Turns out I find out he's a professor, blah, 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 blah. Nice guy, and a big, amazing laugh. I mean, you can't not like the dude. I said, by the way, where are you coming from? He goes, I just went and voted. I'm so disgusted I need a drink. Funny, that's why I'm here. So, and I said, I just voted no for all the judges, and now I feel kind of bad about it. And he goes, you know, so did I. So a beautiful friendship was formed. Right there, we both voted no for all the judges, Eric and I. How's that for a start?
Well, I think that's the problem is, you know, as you can see in Cook County or City of Chicago ballots these days, a lot of the election results are foregone conclusions.
Yeah.
90% of them, they're unopposed. Your vote is meaningless. And the real rub is you're expected to vote for somebody even when there's no opposition candidate, and all that does is juice the possibility of that person, you know, getting funding later on because they look at, here's the number of votes they got in the last election. Yeah, but there's nobody voting against them.
I refuse to do that now. I didn't vote for anybody unopposed, which means I didn't right. vote for half the. But I mean, it's when you talk to people, and it's not like you're trying to lecture or anything. But if somebody says, "Well, I voted," did you? And I said, yeah, I voted, but that doesn't really do any good. What do you mean? And it's your civic, you know, blah, blah, blah. I said, because if you really care, if you really want to get involved, you got to be at this a year ago. You got to figure out, you know, who the X's are and who the O's. You can't just go on that day and hand you know, a Russian ballot where Putin's running unopposed. I think I'll vote for Putin. I mean, what does that do for anybody? Right? I mean, which is pretty much the way ours are in our district. Not to mention, I got to vote for the one guy who was thrown out of the state legislature, and he was running again. And the rules are, if you throw somebody out for being a total crook, and he gets elected back in, you can't throw him out again because the people have spoken. I mean, after break, John, I want to talk a little bit about should we have gone to break, Manny? Did I just blow right through it?
You guys had a good thing going, so I let you go. If you want to take a quick break,
so a quick break, and then we'll come back and see what the market's doing. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Out. It's Matt Weber on the board. We have Sir Jan Flanning. S&P Futures down 1150. Dow Futures down 94. NASDAQ Futures only down 5. So not much down. We can bounce back from this in a second because we seem to be heading north here, by the day, by leaps and bounds. We're getting ourselves, in one man's opinion, we're getting ourselves really starting to get co-opted by this, and the COVID obviously is, I think, added to it. I don't know that's not the cause or anything, but this idea that we can just now sort of pay for anything and it doesn't matter. And we even have a whole new theory of monetarist theory, that is says don't worry about it. I'm like, okay. And our national debt is now pushing $27.5 trillion. Which means, you know, your debt per taxpayer is $219,000. That's a real number. And, our buddy Joe saying we're going to get rid of student loan debt. Well, that's $1.7 trillion. And then we have, people want to go with the, single payer for healthcare. We've got, and there doesn't seem to be any sort of a thought that there's any kind of an end game to this. And yet, I guess if you're over 20-some years old, well, in your lifetime when you're sucking on the bottle, basically, you don't care all that much. But, I mean, we've tried this before, and it's had, you know, dramatically horrible, repercussions. And yet, we don't seem a bit afraid about doing it again. And even though the people we have are older than me, you know, yelling at these people, they should remember this stuff, and they just aren't. I mean, I don't get what they're trying to accomplish here. The only thing that's been positive in the last few years is because we've been passed out so much money to people, in some areas the savings per family has actually gone up quite a bit, even though the debt has also gone up. But if you look at what we're doing with the money supply now, is $19.1 trillion. In 2000, it was 4.9. So we're pushing four times as high, and we're nowhere near that in GDP. So regardless of what they're saying regarding inflation, we've inflated something because the money's somewhere, right? There's a spot we know we're not counting if you use it these things. And we just don't seem to be able to get any sort of an idea of what we're accomplishing. And this is the one that I look at lately, and I don't know why I should, but nobody else does. But look at your income tax revenue. You're listening to Trump. I can't even go there with that guy. He's up to $64 billion on his tariffs, right? I don't know what the tariffs would, there always were tariffs, even before Trump lobbed them on China and stuff. So I can't seem to figure out, John, maybe I can. There's $64 billion this year. Let me go. I don't think they were counted in the debt machine. Like if we went back to 2012, I don't think that the tariffs were broken out. So I can't really compare what the tariffs were in 2012. So I can't. Well, let's try 2016. I don't think they were there either. So that's another one you can't even compare. So the $64 billion that you're getting in this year in tariffs, if Trump didn't do what he did to China and other people, I don't know if that number is $10 billion normal, $5, $20, $30, so I can't really, I mean, somebody can, but I can't find it. But the income tax revenue of the U.S. is $1.6 trillion. I don't think you can count on the payroll tax, because that, in one hand and out, in one pocket out the other, right? That's your Social Security, it's your unemployment, and those kinds of things. Well, your unemployment's a state, but it's all the Social Security and those kinds of things. But now, so look, if we get rid of student loan debt, I mean, in my mind, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it, but if we did, with all the ancillary, okay, if you don't have to pay it, you don't have to pay it to who? What about those guys? Do they get to write it off? Does the government bail them out? I mean, all the million questions that you get with who exactly gets burned by this, the private debt, the public debt, it essentially almost exactly equals a full year of tax revenue. Is anybody put their eyeballs on that, John, and say, wait a minute, you can't blow off an entire country 1 year of tax revenue to bail out students, for God's sake. Like you had nothing else coming in. I mean, what are you doing?
Well, and what are you doing year two?
Well, that's right. Well, in year two, we were supposed to bail out, we're supposed to do it to healthcare, we're supposed to do it some other place. We're supposed to give it out, well, we're going to give another $2 trillion, well, not $2 trillion, we're down to $900 billion maybe for COVID. I mean, so that's another. I mean, this year, our deficit this year, I've got it at two full years of tax revenue, of income tax revenue. And, you know, it's just, that's just a lot. And then you've got people, I actually was listening, talking to my two conservative girlfriend and friend of girlfriend, and they're talking about that they don't have a problem with lowering corporate tax rates because corporations hire people. And I'm going, duh. I mean, you hire people. I hire people. You know, I mean, so the corporate tax revenue is down to $220 billion. It's down. It's like 7 or 8% now of total taxes. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, why not just make it zero? I mean, do we have any idea where we are here, John? I can't even begin to go there. Can you?
No, I think, you know, the whole idea of forgiveness of student loans, which I think is an awful idea, but mainly because it doesn't really do anything, at least do anything productive. I think it's a way of saving face with a certain, you know, corner of the voting population who feels that they can't get ahead in any way, you know, starting a family or a career or getting a place to live in, whatever, without being, you know, relieved of this burden. But the bigger issue, and the student loan problem is a completely separate one, is what has college, no matter what you pay for it, really enabled you to do over the long haul? And the idea of college, the way it's been packaged now and sold to people, is essentially corrupt. It's supposed to be a way of advancing, you know, increasing your earning power over your lifetime to get into a meaningful job and to prove your, you know, competitiveness in a market where your particular skill that you acquired in college is valued and you will be compensated for having acquired it. That's all gone out the window. You got people, you know, for several generations now walking around with pretty useless degrees that never, even in good times, probably translated to higher earning power, or at least you know nothing like what you had dreamed it would do. And then you had the colleges that were profiting off of all this, you know, huge influx of student aid money that was trickled down into adjunct professors working at less than minimum wage, pretty much, while they put their, you know, profits into expanding their physical plant and their administrative wings and their, you know, the theaters and their sports complexes and their lazy rivers and you name it. It had nothing to do with education.
Well, you can't have an angry river on a campus. Why do you need an angry river on a campus? You need a lazy one. Right. You want people drowning in there. Even I know,
I mean, and now you can't even sell that experience.
That's right.
The COVID era, you can't go to any of these places.
Well, you can't. So you don't want anybody drowning with COVID.
Particularly corrupt to me that you're. It isn't like that you've seen any collapse in tuition prices because of COVID.
No.
Or refunds, you know, except for room and board, but the rest of it, forget it. And I think there's no way to fix that problem even by forgiving student loan, it doesn't change the fact that you've still got a degree that is pretty much worthless. And it's never going to mean your ability to earn a dime or a nickel more than you could without that degree, because the jobs never were going to be there to begin with. So what do you do? Go back and get another degree in a more useful field? It's not going to fix the problem of what people really see the problem as having become. It's just a way of tamping down their anger and their frustration and thinking that now life will be better for me. And maybe in 10 or 20 years it will sink in that no, life has not gotten any better. But by then all of these politicians will be dead, so who cares?
Well, I think it makes a... I have a kind of a different point of view, Jen, as usual. But I think it makes a huge difference. And I think that you're not being straight with yourself. I'm not accusing you. Yeah, I am. But when you and I went, the tuition was low enough that you didn't use it as a technical school. I mean, you went to Notre Dame. We happened to, and it was $3,100 a year or some ridiculously low number. And you know what? Your parents didn't care if you got an English degree. My parents didn't care if I got an economics degree. I got a Notre Dame education. I learned something when I was there. I didn't come out with a shred of debt, and I don't think you did either.
I did, but that's.
But it was what, a grand, two grand or something? I mean, it couldn't have been that much.
Well, I borrowed to the max for the Illinois Guaranteed Loan Program because I have a twin brother who was in college at the same time.
Well, I blame him.
We didn't have, even then we didn't have enough money to throw around to pay it off every year. We had other comforts. We had a house. We had a couple cars usually, and took vacations. But we didn't have a extravagant lifestyle. And college was something neither my parents had available to them. So this was a big thing for them. They were going to do what they had to do to pay for it. But I came out as you did in the middle of a recession.
Yeah.
In 1974, and I saw after a couple of years that my English degree wasn't going to get me where I wanted to be. So I went back and went to law school. And after a couple of years of that, I realized this isn't going to float my boat. I went back and got a PhD in English. So all of this is, the way I could see things playing out for me personally, that if I wanted to survive, I wasn't ever looking to make a million bucks with any of these degrees, believe me.
Well, 74 was a horrible year.
It helped to have these things. And I think it did certainly help me. But I look around at people, the generation coming up behind me. I don't know the college gives them anything like that anymore. It certainly makes a difference at a certain level, and I'm not bashing college as an experience, but I just think it's been completely oversold as a way of getting the good life, and believe me, it isn't.
Well, no, it's a way of learning how to deal with people, meeting people from different areas, and learning some stuff and being on your own. But there couldn't have been a worse year than 74 to graduate.
Oh, no.
I fled to... How many of our buddies...
If I'd come out the year before, I would have had many more opportunities,
yeah,
I'll tell
yeah.
you.
Well, I mean, I fled to the MBA program in Chicago. How many of the rest of our buddies, fled to law school? I don't know anybody who got a job. Right out of there to you. Might have been somebody.
I got a job, Tom. $5,500 a year, full-time.
Well, I got a job that summer as a janitor in the Board of Ed. But anyway, what I'm saying is the idea of forgiving something. Of course, Kevin and Carl were all over it last night that you can't just, what about the people that paid it off? But on the other hand, we have a federal government of marginal use here, I think, in a lot of ways. It's been giving money to people for free now for 12 years. And yet we're still charging people in student loans 6.5%. I would not be opposed, and this would go for people that have paid it off in forever, and say, you know what? We've really screwed these people for the last 12 years. I would retroactively drop the rates 2% and give people that much of a drop-off on their student loan. I almost would want to do it on credit cards at 20-some percent, but that's another story from another day. And if somebody actually paid it off 5 years ago, I'd send them a check. If I really thought that they were absolutely getting screwed. But here's where I'd like your opinion on this, Jen, is that when I graduated school, I like My parents didn't have a whole lot of dough either, but if you just would have drowned your brother at age 2, you wouldn't have any problems.
Or he could have drowned me.
Or he would have drowned, yeah, whatever. Maddie's got the same issue. If you just would have drowned that brother, of course he's not a twin, but he's close enough. But I mean, when I got out of school, I didn't, my parents, my mom paid for the tuition through, because my dad died young and she saved $100 and some a month. Essentially that was my tuition from, the aid to dependent children. Same thing for my bro. And you could do that with a $3,000 thing. And I did all my own stuff in the summer. So books and all that stuff. I never had to ask for $20 here and $20 there. But I was about as independent as you could get. I mean, my first few jobs, my first few years, you know, my mom said, your bedroom is always there for you if you need it. So don't worry about taking a chance, right?
So with my mom.
Yeah, and so the idea that if I, you know, I wasn't a big demonstrator, but if I wanted to put a sandwich sign on and went somewhere, if I had a boss, which I never did because I liked all my bosses, I really could have said, take my job and shove it. Take your job and shove it. I mean, there's an independence there that I think we're screwing our young people. Because they're,
yep.
I mean, they basically are the, you know, the turn, ten, I mean, they're almost like the people who worked for the coal mines and had the company script. What is it, 10, what is it, how many, 16 tons, another day, another dollar, what was it, 16 tons?
What he has deeper in debt.
Another day older and deeper in debt. Yeah, I owe St. Peter, don't you call me, because I owe my soul to the company store or something. I mean, we're almost at the same thing. You know, where we've got people 50 years old still owing this debt, for God's sake. And we're paying this, you know, with the penalties. And then we say, okay, we'll forbear the debt. You don't have to pay us for a year. But, oh, by the way, you're still paying the 6%. I mean, we've got to break this cycle somehow, Jen. Now, just to say you don't owe it and other people still owe their stuff. But I think if we all sat down, I want the people totally on the right. I'd want the Carls. I'd want those kinds of guys. And I'd want, you know, Frank in the same room. And I have to be in the middle with, like, squirt guns just in case they get out of line. But I mean, somewhere in there, there's a solution. It's not a forgiveness. It's some sort of a, do we really need to charge people 6.5% for student loans when we're giving the money to the bank for zero? I don't think so. Could it be 4?
Well, I think it would be much fairer to just make these, you know, debts chargeable in bankruptcy.
Well, that too. But
like
then,
any other debt.
Yeah, but then,
I mean,
then
that
you
would get, be enough of a check, I think, on the stupid borrowing that people did. But it wouldn't punish the people who made loans or are getting stiff now. And what's that going to do once you forgive debt? What's it going to do to the industry of lending money for higher education?
Well, the industry should never have been, it should never have been get money for zero and do it for 6.5%.
Well, right.
If you
make it so that your investment is that uncertain going forward, what will that do to the possibility of getting a college education? All the colleges will go out of business pretty much.
They could just lower their costs like they should. I mean, they shouldn't be where they are. I mean,
it will then turn into an all adjunct system completely, and it will be maybe what it's always been destined to be over time, but this will just accelerate.
Well, I mean, but Jen, you know what? I mean, I've had many an adult beverage with Eric, and Eric's he's a writer and a brilliant man. I said, Eric, how much does it actually cost to teach a student? And I mean, not that he, you know, I couldn't worm it out of him, I could, but, and he said, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm going to ask you how much you make. Say 150, and he goes, don't say that. That's too much. I'm not asking. I just put a number on. Say it's 100, and you're teaching however many kids. And, you know, if we bought some old, if we bought Tilden Tech and remodeled the place and said, this is going to be a college, and all you're going to do is drive up, go to college, and go home. And, you know, we'll have McDonald's in the cafeteria or something. What is the actual cost of doing this? I mean, how much different is it than back in your and my day when the professor's making 45 grand and the tuition is 3,100 and there's 25 people on average in a class? I mean, that I can sense the number. I mean, some of this stuff is so out of whack. We've had a gentleman in the area contributor a while ago. Now he lives in Steamboat. But he used to drive down, and maybe still does, John. He used to drive down to Denver, and he loves the University of Denver. That's where he went. He's a frat there. He would teach two legal classes and would teach, you know, however many credits. I say he's teaching 45 kids twice, so he's teaching you know, 90 kids, 3 credit hours, a quarter or a semester, whatever the hell it is. They're paying him like $2,500, like you're talking about. Now, his kid's going there at the time, and the kid's, you know, taking however many credit hours you take in a course of a year, say 30. So roughly a third on the year that the old man's teaching a quarter or a semester, and he's paying like 40. I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, how do those numbers even remotely? You don't have to be an MBA to figure out something's wrong there.
Or how many research institutions have hired big-name people for, you know, $500,000, $1 million, and brought their spouses along, too, and they don't teach anything. Yeah, they're just there to be a magnet for money and other people and to write, you know, research proposals and to go out on the speaking tour and to be kind of marketing for this institution. But they produce almost nothing in terms of education for the paying students. So where's that model coming from?
Well, yeah, so I'm saying, but this money, we've got this idea that the money's just there, and we're just going to, you know, forgive this, forgive that. It doesn't. We need to get things down to a normal number. And Notre Dame or Northwestern or whoever it is, they can't get so far away from what does it really cost to put 25 people in a class and have a competent professor teaching them. If you get, you know, 100 times that, where are you going with this? I mean, I looked at the University of California, and it's hard now because they don't have the numbers the same way. I think their number is $100,000 a student that actually costs them, Jen. Now, I don't know what the student pay. I mean, for a while it was I won't say free. It was included if you were in state. Right now it's not. I think you got to pay something or a bunch of fees, so it's not quote free anymore. But they've got something where what's her name? The little God, it's politically incorrect. The two short ladies that work for Obama and one of them,
Shalala and Napolitano.
Yeah, we have one went to. Head of the California schools, and one went to Miami. The one went to Miami, I think, is now, she's a representative now or something.
She just lost.
She's lost, yeah. Is that Shalala, right?
Yeah.
Well, Napolitano, I think, might still be the head of the, they've got a building in Oakland where they've got 300 people in the building that are overhead. They're not even near a campus. In addition to the 7 camp, I mean, what are we doing? How much overhead do you need, for God's sake?
This sounds like CPS.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, but I mean, at some point here do you say, I found one piece of paper that said, for every professor or every teacher in the California system, there's 10 indirect employees. Now, when we went to Notre Dame, I don't even think it was 1-to-1. Do you? I mean, if you counted the maids who made nothing, right, that they got rid of, and maybe all the people in the dining hall and the other stuff, I guess it could have been 1-to-1 if you counted the students, you know,
I mean,
washing
dishes.
You
could go into the cashier's office at Notre Dame, and you would see a fleet of, you know, like 10 or 15 women sitting behind their manual or maybe electric typewriters banging out stuff every day. And there was data entry by then, too, so, you know, your transcript was computerized and everything. But even with all that, there couldn't have been a 1-to-1.
No.
You know, it's just impossible. And I would say Notre Dame is a model of a better way of doing it, because they really have, I think, spent the money fairly wisely, and they've got enough of an educational product now with a draw that they don't have to just spend ridiculous amounts of money to get a good faculty and to get a good student body. Other colleges have just, you know, swallowed the Kool-Aid and seen this as a way of surviving in an ever more competitive time, and they've just blown fantastic sums of money to produce very little that's going to, you know, make them survivable. So there's going to be a huge shakeout anyway, I think, in the number of colleges and the opportunities for college education compared to what we've seen, whether there's debt forgiveness or not. If there is debt forgiveness, I think you're going to see the number of college programs collapse.
Well, Jen, I don't want to
get into the bad thing, but
it's
certainly something we have to prepare for and have some way of accommodating. So.
Well, here's what I want. I mean, and I'll never get it. Something simple. I shouldn't have to explain to people that are adults what happens in the first day economics class. Somehow, with all the money we're spending on education, people should know that. To some extent. I mean, to the point where's the money going to come from? What do you mean? Well, the federal government. How much do they have? I don't know. Should I know? Yeah, I mean, these are simple questions, Janet. And people that have spent 16 years in a school, whatever level you're in, you should be able to figure this out. And I don't know if people do. It's like, anyway, Janet, take care of yourself. Maybe we'll talk later. Well, you and I will certainly talk. We've got the, let me see where the spoos are here. My one machine is not working. Spoos down 10. Be right back, Mr. Meichardt.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and low pay stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Howie, just from over on the board. SP futures down 11, Dow futures down 93, NASDAQ futures down, broken up, $1.75. Can't keep a good market down. Over in, buy the dip. DAX down 50 points, 0.4%. FTSE down up 18.3%. CAC around down 45. It's getting lower. That's 0.8%. So they're down a reasonable amount here. For Asia, Nikkei down 203.7%. Shanghai down 27.8%. This is a big one here. Hang Seng down 329, 1.2%. So they're kind of leading the pack there. Bonds, 0.94. It's actually down 2 basis points today. One minus 0.57, where they are very comfortable being because they've been there forever, it seems. Japan, positive 0.2. They've been there forever. We've got oil down 35 cents, 45.91. Brent down 38 cents, 48.88. Natural gas down 17, 239. RBOB down a penny to 125. I got gas this weekend, 215, Maddie. What did you pay? Just saying. Gold down 240, 1837. That's less than it was down earlier. Silver down 38 cents, 23.46.
Copper down 2 cents, 349. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. The Bears. Where's my Super Bowl tickets?
They're not. You can go to the Super Bowl, but you'll be the only fan there. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there once again. No issues to report still, as we've had a very quiet Monday morning. I think the shutdown, or whatever you want to call it, is fully in effect because no one is on the roadways this morning. And it's very quiet to get anywhere downtown. Only crash in the area is out in the western suburbs. North Avenue, which is Route 64, on the westbound side at Grace Street, there was an accident. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, clouds early. Then we will see some partly cloudy sunshine peeking through this afternoon, but a high of just 39. Right now it's overcast and 36 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 80 today. Right now it's clear and 43. In sports, the Bears had a 10-point lead late in the fourth quarter and gave up 14 unanswered points to close out the game, losing to the Lions 34-30. Bears have now dropped 6 in a row and are 5-7 after a 5-1 start. Cardinals have dropped 3 in a row, and they're down to 500 at 6-6 after losing at home to the Rams 38-28. Sunday Night Football last night, it was an ugly defensive game, but the Chiefs held on to beat the Broncos 22-16 on 4 field goals. Lastly, college hoops, Notre Dame held on to beat Detroit Mercy 78-70. Chief.
What, Mike, you with us?
I am. How's it going, Chief?
Doing good. How are you? Did your team win?
We're playing tonight, actually.
Oh, that's right.
San Francisco Giants.
What was the line?
49ers.
Giants. What was the line on? Well, now they're the Arizona 49ers.
That's right. They're playing in Arizona for the next couple of weeks.
That's right. Yep.
What was the spread on the Seattle New York game?
I will find that.
The Giants have actually looked a little bit better.
The Giants have won 4 in a row and are in first place in a bad division, but they're a completely different team. And they won with their backup quarterback yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. I thought the Broncos might pull it off, but then they didn't. They played some good D in the red zone.
Well, Vic Fangio, the longtime Bears defensive coordinator, is the head coach now at Denver. And they really compete on that side of the ball. They just don't have any ability on offense. So, you know, they play the Raiders tough. They play the Chiefs tough. They play everyone tough. And they can occasionally sneak out a win by running the ball, but they just don't have the weapons. And even though the defense played great, holding the Chiefs at home to 22 points, you like your chances there, but they just couldn't score. By the way, it looks like the Giants and Seahawks spread was Seahawks by 10.5.
Wow.
And the Giants won outright, obviously.
I bet the money line was big.
Giants plus 425. So that's really good. So obviously you put $100 down on the Giants and you win 425. That's a nice deal.
If you win,
Which they did.
Which they did. And really, it didn't look like it wasn't like they lucked off either. I mean, they were the better team, it looked like.
They dominated the entire game.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And made Russell Wilson look average at best. And the Seahawks defense hasn't been good all year, but the defense actually played well for them. So you would have thought Seattle would have won because the defense played well, but they couldn't do anything on offense.
Yeah, that's wild. So, Mike, we have the market's still doing what it's doing. We're in the – I don't remember thought the big strategy would be buy the dip, but clearly Friday was about as bad an employment report as we could even hope to get, right? And the more Carl dug into it, the worse it got. But we're right into this, and I'm gonna say for my many, many years in the business, I've always found it the most difficult to trade when bad news is good news and the other way around.
And that's been the case for quite a while. You know, the unemployment number, I remember when I first started trading, that was a big number. You know, we would wait, anticipate, have our numbers in our head, and you know, there was a scramble to hear the number first, so there was a lot of benefit in knowing what that number was first. I think with the rise of algorithmic trading, it's become much more difficult to give weight to these numbers because, I mean, on a short term, it's nearly impossible. But even on like a longer term, you say for the rest of the day, the path that is most likely followed often isn't it. We're especially seeing that now with you could never say a year ago that we'd have unemployment numbers this dire and the market be making all-time highs, which is what I want to talk about a little bit today, is just the highs that we're making and what we saw in the month of November. It was an unbelievable month.
Well, yeah, and I'm going to lob this one out there, and I would love you to critique me. I was able, normally you can't get these kind of details, but I was able to go to the money supply numbers and find that because of the weekly somehow ends on a Monday and the monthly ended on a Friday at October and whatever it was, you could find out that the day before the election, the Fed put something like $400 billion into the system. Even it was a bulge in M1. They couldn't even get an M2. They put it in so fast. It's in M2 if it's in M1 by definition. But and I think that carried us the whole month, Mike. It has nothing to do with anything regarding value. If you look at the Fed putting money in or pulling money out for the last 30 years, if you just watch those numbers or can get them when other people are getting them, we get them too late. You can trade this market easy, I think, if you had the number.
I can't, but you know, I think for the first time you can say, I mean, the first time that I first example I can think of is the Fed's playing volatility. Volatility a month ago was what was called backwardated. And this is where volatility is higher actually in the front month than it is in the back. And you think that's counterintuitive because there's more risk placed on the next few days than there is, say, 6 months from now. And there's so much uncertainty 6 months from now. Typically, volatility is just higher in the future. Now, this cash injection that the Fed made was a way to, I think, stem some of that risk. You don't want a functioning market where you have backwardated volatility curves. So by putting money into the system, it calmed some fears. It brought volatility down. And now we're seeing what we call a contango curve. And in contango, this is what we see 84% of the time going back to 1990. This is where volatility is actually higher in the future, as it should be. So right now, we're seeing that normal volatility curve. You can make the argument that's what they were doing.
I'm going to say, I mean, we've talked about this before. I'm going to say if you went back before 20 years, you'd find just the opposite.
You'd find the opposite in reaction,
if you look at the implied volatility is going out. I mean, back before there was a VIX when they came out with the leaps in, you know, whatever 1988 or whatever. If you picked a stock, say you went IBM, and IBM, I'm going to say, God, it's been so long I looked at it, but IBM's normal volatility was like, you know, 17 or something, 16.5, because IBM never moved all that much. I mean, you'd look at the near term and it'd be 17. And you'd look out 2 months and it'd be, you know, 16.8 or something. And if you went out 2 years, it'd be, you know, 16.5. It'd be very close, but slightly lower. Because the models would, in those days, people thought was, that going out, I mean, there's going to be a lot of earnings, some good, some bad, the next 2 years, right? So you're not even worried about that. You were more anxious to sell insurance out 2.5 years than you were tomorrow, and that's the nuts and bolts of the options model, because the options model's not right because of the Fed curves and stuff. But in those days, you didn't have massive budget deficits. You didn't have the political where we could be in an armed revolution 2 years. You didn't have that crap. But now that stuff is hanging all over the market. I mean, you can't have people lobbing out on a weekend. Hey, maybe we'll, you know, and I'm not saying there isn't something to be done here. We're going to get rid of student loan debt. And this morning I'm looking, well, that's a year of taxation. That's kind of a lot. How the hell are you going to make that up? So, I mean, you didn't have people saying stupid stuff like that. Not that helping people out with student loan debt or recognizing that it's a problem isn't something we need to address. But to just lob that one out there in a weekend to make some people feel good, I mean, it's trouble for the market, because we're already talking, you know, 2 and 3, times years taxation we're spending this year, and now we got guys lobbing stuff on for the years to come. Would you want to sell? And plus, to be perfectly blunt, Mike, I mean, the market right now, after as high as it's been in November, despite what the VIX tells you, despite what the market tells you, it's way riskier than it was when it was cheaper. If I buy a stock at 300 now when it was 200 a month ago, guess what? it's riskier than it was then. I don't care who you are. That's the truth, I think. Am I wrong?
Yeah. You're not wrong. No, you're absolutely right. It's counterintuitive. We're making all-time highs. It should be, champagne and caviar on Wall Street. But the fact of the matter is there is more risk. There's more risk today, and you're starting to see that risk incorporated in the upside skew of the market. You're seeing it incorporated in other places. People are getting afraid of more of an upside. If that makes any sense, everyone's long stocks. But the upside risk is just as much there. But the further and further we go up, the more and more it seems that the put skew is getting in there again. And we're seeing that by a normalized curve. People are starting to be afraid of a downside move, and a big one. So we're looking at a VIX of 22 today. All-time highs and VIX at 22 don't go hand in hand, but that's where we're at. 22, how do you think of it? Think of it as a 22% move over the next year. That's what the market is predicting right now, as a 22% move over the next year. I want to run through some numbers real fast, just so we have time for them. I put this together before the show. I just want to say some of the ETFs that I looked at this morning. SPY, so we have an 11.7% rally in November. QQQ, that's a NASDAQ, is 13%. Dow, DIA, 12.1%. And here's the big one, IWM, up 20%. 20% is an all-time record. I couldn't find another time in a month period, not a 30-day period, in a month period, which is about 30 days, that we've actually rallied that much. So this is an all-time record for IWM. ETFs that did the best this month, XLE, energy, up 35%. You have biotechs doing really well, up 20%. And when was the last time you saw USO up 20%? That happens more often just because, crude oil market's a little crazy. But that's what the numbers that we're looking at, and they're big numbers.
Well, I mean, we have to show you how bizarre this is becoming, Michael, you understand. I put a bunch of people, when I started doing a lot of this protected index program for other firms other than just ours, so I put a real lot of money to work maybe 2 years ago. Almost exactly 2 years ago. It was January after the big sell-off in 2018. And in the next 2 years, the difference between where I put it was a lot easier when the only one you had was a spider, right? Well, now you've got the Russell, you got the spider, you got the QQQ. So which one you pick now makes all the dramatic difference in the world. So we had people in the Russell who wanted to be in the Russell, basically didn't really participate much, made some money. They were selling covered calls on it every month. Every month we made dough. Well, I'm not saying every, but I mean, by and large, the thing didn't move. So we made money on the calls, but it wasn't running up to 20% like the QQQs, and everybody's basically bitching. Not everybody. I got great clients, but the people are saying, hey, how come we're not in the Qs? Well, that's where the fangs are, right? So all of a sudden, we had no problem selling these calls, and now 2 months ago, we've got calls that are $20 in the money. It's something that in 2 years didn't move $4. And now you're saying, you're right. In 8 weeks, the thing's up $20. I'm going, wait a minute. I mean, but the weird part of it is, Mike, it's if you go all the way back, the cheapest volatility I ever saw was the August of 87. The cheapest implied volatility, they had buttons made up in the OEX bid, just say no to puts. Because I got tired every morning, some firm would sell you puts and you just sucked on them all day or all week or all month. Whether they say on the trading floor, today's bid is tomorrow's offer, it was exactly what that was. And PTI was Morningstar's Money Manager of the Year in 2007, because we actually made money on the downside. You might ask yourself, how the hell did you do that, Chief, with your Protected Index program? The implied volatility got so low, Mike, that I put all kinds of money to work, because we had a lot of customers came to us for whatever reason that summer before all this happened. And the volatility was so low that I said, you know what? I'm buying these puts at way cheaper than I've ever bought them before. Why don't I just buy a few extras? Because I could buy 50% more puts a couple of months before the whole thing fell apart for the same price that a year before I was buying the puts one-to-one. So instead of paying like $15 for the put, I'm paying $10. And I said, you know, at this price, why don't I just buy... I thought 15 was a good buy. Why don't I buy 50% more? And I did. And lo and behold, the thing craps out, and we make a bunch of dough for people on the way down, which that's not supposed to happen.
The amazing thing about volatility is mathematically, this isn't going to sink in just over a radio show. You're going to have to spend time working on this. But the fact of the matter is it's mathematically a mean reverting equation. So mathematically, volatility does revert to a mean. And when it's really low, there is a mathematical reversion that is going to go back up at least to 15.5, which is the historical mean. So, and that hasn't shifted. And when it's really high like this, like at 22, eventually we're going to anticipate retraction back to the mean. So it goes back to, I don't know, maybe Warren Buffett said, sell when fear, he said fear is high and buy when fear is low, which you could imply meaning options.
Well, I mean, it's so totally counterintuitive. If you and I, or any of the listeners, or anybody out there who I think should be listening and aren't, you go buy a Corvette. Now, some of you do. Some of you and Maddie Weber would do. I can't fit in the darn thing. So you go buy a Corvette. Thing's worth $100,000 or something. You're going to pay through the nose for insurance. Well, every year, the Corvette is worth, like, less. You're going to pay less for insurance. Right? I'm talking about collision. Right? Until someday it becomes a collector's item, and maybe you got to pay more. It's the only place in the world where if people have a stock at 300 when it's, you know, when it's 10 times revenue and 100 times earnings, they're so comfortable because it came from 200 that the insurance is actually low. If the thing craps out and goes to like 100, where maybe it's quote worth, all of a sudden your implied volatility is going to be double where it was at 300. I mean, the way people price stocks and the fear on stocks is totally different than the way they do any other piece of property. Any other storehouse of value. Obviously, the thing is, you shouldn't have to worry about insuring it at 100 if you thought it was worth 300, right? Why are people so calm at highs and so nervous at lows?
Well, it's maybe it goes into a psychological thing, but really, it's the fact of the matter is buying insurance is just that, and that's how you can view the options market as an insurance market. But when market's going up, typically most holdings are long holdings. So when the market's going up, everybody's making money, and the amount of insurance just simply goes down. When everyone's making money, it's, everyone's making money. What's the point of insuring this? But when markets go down, that's when everyone wants insurance. Everyone wants the insurance after the fact. So everyone wants hurricane insurance when the hurricane's 3 days away.
Oh, yeah.
But if you live somewhere where a hurricane hasn't hit for the past 10 years, you might say, we haven't had a hurricane in 10 years. I'm betting another year of no hurricane. So that the price of that hurricane insurance is quite low. So I think it's the nature of the insurance market, and I think it's the nature of the fact that most positions, you could say greater than 50% of positions are long positions. So long stocks, passive investments, if you're not including those options. And that's what ultimately happens. I think that is the cause of this. But I also want to mention, you know, we're accumulating a huge amount of debt in this country. And debt is amazingly powerful in magnifying things. So on the short term, it helps out a lot. It's kind of like if you have a credit card that has a huge limit and you've got $0 on it right now. Well, you can have a great time in the short run. But debt is by nature and by definition something that has to get paid back in the future. You're leveraging the future to pay for the present. And what we're doing right now is, in a way, you could make an analogy. That's exactly what we're doing now. We're leveraging the future to pay for the present with the anticipation that we're going to make more and create more wealth to pay for that future that we just sold.
Mike, you would not be welcome at a new monetarist meeting. They think it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't be welcome in a lot of places.
If you want to go in there, you better bring, like, not just some beer, you better bring some good booze, or else they're not going to let you in. Just saying. But what do you think, and I don't know if I mentioned it to you last week when you were in, we had a client, obviously going to go nameless, who had he was in one of the big funds that were off balance sheet at Bear Stearns, and he he lost a bunch of dough, I'm going to say early, not so long ago, 2007, maybe even late 2006. I mean, if I'd have had, you know, but I mean, how do you, whenever I think about it, I feel like smacking myself upside the head, but why didn't I look at that and say, got something's like really, really wrong at Bear Stearns? I mean, the thing must be, market's going up every day. You got Larry Kudlow, greatest story never told. Why would I ever go to think that this is a systemic problem at Bear Stearns, not just at Bear Stearns, but every other place, and that this was the canary in the coal mine, and the place is going to be out of business in 5 months? Why would I ever? But there always is some little canary, Mike, like you're saying now. I mean, the Chinese markets have been up, okay? Yet all the stuff you and I have been talking about the last 3 weeks, I mean, a couple of times, is all of a sudden some of the debt coming out of China has been non-performing now for the last few months. I mean, somewhere, what is the canary in the coal? Obviously, in Bear Stearns, it was right in front of my face. The big guy upstairs said, here, this is what's going on at Bear Stearns. But I never put two and two together. I mean, Pete Najarian, who I think is a good guy, real smart guy, in 4 days before, when Bear Stearns went from, 70 to 32, he goes, it's got to be a buy here. 2 days later, they're out of business. Now, why would Pete, you know, like I said, Pete's no dummy. Why would he even begin to think that with today's world, when you're supposed to have audited systems and all this stuff, that Bear Stearns had all this stuff off balance sheet and was going to take the firm down in 48 hours? Why would he even begin to think that? In the same way with me.
Well, here's the thing. Market movement can be broken down into math, just like a lot of things. A lot of things can get broken down into math. So can the stock market. And you have probabilities. You have probabilities of expected moves. And Pete was making a fair assumption around probabilities. Look, the probability of a 3-standard-deviation move is very low. It's 99.7% that it's not going to happen. So Pete was working around normal standard probabilities. The problem is we had a 7 or a 10-standard-deviation move. This is what we call black swan event, tail risk. You have to bet against tail risk every time or you're never going to make a trade. So you have to use probabilities in your favor, but recognize sometimes it's going to hit you in the face. So how do you prepare for tail risk? Well, you have to trade small. You have to protect yourself. And you have to recognize or run scenarios in your head. Hey, if this happens, if I get a 10-standard deviation move, if I get a 2-standard deviation move, am I protected? Do I have some way to mitigate the risk? And if the answer is no, maybe you need to reevaluate your portfolio somewhat or go on the assumption that I'm a risk taker and I'm willing to take on this risk for the potential rewards.
Don't disagree, Mike, except if I'm always, you and I are always going to push back and forth because it helps us, I think. If I look at a stock I don't even know the name of, never even heard of, and the thing's trading 300 and, you know, 8 weeks ago it was like 40, you know, I'm going to say, yeah, there's some tail risk here, and these guys are all over this new meeting stock. They don't even know the name of it. So I'm not even going to talk about Zoom or anybody. And all of a sudden, there's a tail risk. This thing could be back to 12 in 6 months, like I saw Cisco in 2000. That to me is somewhat different than the Bear Stearns situation, because I know how much the auditors come in here and search basically where the sun don't shine. For me to think that Pete was wrong and that the thing wasn't worth 32, it immediately flashes through my brain. These guys are a regulated firm. They're a big place. How in the hell could all these people that their job it is to watch these guys? I'm not saying the stock couldn't be higher than it should. How could they have off balance sheet companies that somehow they hid from people? We could never. I mean, it's an assumption not just of the market or a black swan. It's that the entire regulatory framework fell apart, and they were all morons. I mean, that to me is a huge leap, even though I've seen guys that aren't the brightest, maybe, but I would never have guessed that in this day and age, Mike.
Yep, and the market keeps surprising us. Hey, I think it was this year we had negative oil. Oil actually went negative.
Yeah,
Think about that, and wow.
You're right, man.
You know, the market keeps surprising us.
Mike, thank you very much, buddy. S&P futures, we're coming back a little bit. We're down 86, S&P down 10, and Nasdaq's actually up to, we'll probably be buying the dip here. We'll talk about it tomorrow morning. Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early. I mean,
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.